This talk, you know, is about classical simulation of quantum computing. And, you know, we believe that quantum computers can't be efficiently simulated by classical computers. And, you know, why should we then improve classical simulation algorithms? There's a few reasons. One is we might wish to quantify the classically hard resources. You know, what is it exactly that makes it hard to classically simulate quantum computing? The second motivation is to, you know, push the limits of exactly where the classical simulation algorithms are unable to scale, and to use that to verify or validate small quantum computers. And the third is to sort of give confidence in this belief that quantum computers can't be efficiently simulated by classical computers. I mean, we should keep trying, or else we might not discover algorithms that could be interesting challenges to this belief. Okay, so what do I mean by classical simulation of quantum circuits? So here we have a quantum circuit, and you start in all zeros, and then you measure all the qubits, and you obtain a bit string from some probability distribution, and so I'm going to call that P of Z. And strong simulation is, given a bit string, compute the probability of that bit string. And this is a hard computational problem. It's harder than what quantum computers are able to do. It's sharply hard. I'm also going to talk about epsilon strong simulation, where we're given a bit string. We want to compute a relative error approximation to the probability of that bit string. And that is also sharply hard and harder than what quantum computers can achieve. And finally, we could talk about weak simulation, where the goal is to sample a bit string from this probability distribution. And that's what quantum computers do. OK. So in terms of classical simulation algorithms, the sort of naive algorithms for simulating quantum computers on a classical computer have exponential scaling in the number of qubits or the number of gates. The most naive algorithm is you store a complex vector of length 2 to the n, representing the state of n qubits, and update by applying gates, which are sparse matrices, and this algorithm has runtime and memory requirements both exponential and the number of qubits. Another sort of naive algorithm is to take a quantum circuit amplitude and write out the matrix multiplication as a large sum, and now on the right-hand side we have a sum of exponentially many terms, but each term requires a small amount of memory, and so this algorithm has runtime exponential in the number of gates, and polynomial in the number of memory, in the amount of memory. And this algorithm, there was a recent sort of modification of it, which is kind of surprising that you could do anything new that sort of modifies the simple algorithm in an interesting way. And it was shown last year by Aronson and Chen that you can obtain exponential scaling only in the number of qubits, not the number of gates, with a mild dependence on the circuit depth, while maintaining a small memory requirement. Okay, so the algorithms that we are going to consider are going to be extensions of the Gauss-McNeil theorem and Clifford simulation, so I'm going to just review that, although I know this is familiar to many of you. We know that the Clifford group is generated by Hadamard, phase, and C-naught, and stabilizer states are the quantum states generated by Clifford unitaries. The whole talk I'm going to be talking about qubits, and of course there's interesting things to say about qdit stabilizer formalism, but that is not the subject of this talk. And we know the Gauss-McNeil theorem that quantum circuits composed of Clifford gates can be efficiently simulated on a classical computer. And so we are going to consider the Clifford plus T gate set, where we add a single qubit gate, which is the T gate. And there are various reasons you might consider this gate set. Like, for example, we have fast, optimal compilation algorithms for single qubit unitaries, and it's a natural choice for fault-tolerant quantum computers. And so when you add this T gate, you get a universal gate set, and that's the gate set that the most basic simulation algorithm I'm going to talk about applies to. So the strategy is to go outward from the Cliffords. And so we start with Clifford circuits, where you know you can simulate in polynomial time as a function of the number of qubits and the number of gates. And then you can ask, can you maintain that polynomial scaling in the number of qubits and number of gates while increasing the number of T gates? And you can ask, how does the scaling with the number of T gates go? Okay, so like I'm just going to very quickly sort of review the results from this paper from 2016, and then I'll go into the new results. So the way that that paper works is we take a T-gate and we replace it with this well-known gadget, which implements a T-gate using a resource state called a magic state, which is a single qubit non-Clifford or non-stabilizer state. And so on the right-hand side, we have this resource state, we have some Clifford gates, which are and when one of them is classically controlled. So everything on the right-hand side is classically controlled Clifford gates acting on a resource state, and that is sufficient to implement this non-Clifford gate, the T-gate. And so if we have a Clifford plus T circuit, we can gadgetize it by replacing all the T gates with this gadget. And what we get is an adaptive Clifford circuit, which has an input state that's not a stabilizer state. It's the original input state, all zeros, and a bunch of these magic states. And so the sort of non-Cliffordness of this inputs of this computation is entirely contained in the input state, and everything else is a Clifford computation. And so now you can ask, well, how sort of, you can hope to have a simulation algorithm that scales with this non-Cliffordness of this input state. Because we know that if the input state was stabilizer, then everything would just be a Clifford computation, and that would be classically simulable. And so the measures of non-Cliffordness that are used to in these algorithms are, there are two of them. One is the stabilizer rank. Here we have a quantum state, and we decompose it as a superposition of stabilizer states. And the stabilizer states in the superposition need not be orthogonal. And sort of the interesting case is when they're not orthogonal. And the stabilizer rank is the minimum number of terms in such a decomposition. Likewise, we can define the approximate stabilizer rank, which is again, we consider a decomposition as a sum of stabilizer states, but now we only ask for this decomposition to be approximate. So these are measures of sort of non-Cliffordness for quantum states. The larger the stabilizer rank and the larger the approximate stabilizer rank, the sort of more non-stabilizer or non-Clifford the state is. And so this is where I summarize the results that we have. And then from here, I'll describe some new results. So the stabilizer rank simulators that have been developed, starting with Bravi, Smith, and Smolin from 2015, and continuing with our work, they have classical simulation cost that scales with the stabilizer rank of the magic state input. And the simulation cost for strong simulation from the Bravi, Smith, and Smolin paper goes like the stabilizer rank squared of the magic state input. And then in our paper, we consider epsilon strong simulation and weak simulation, and we get scaling, which is the stabilizer rank and the approximate stabilizer rank, respectively. And all of these algorithms have cost that scales polynomially in the number of qubits and the number of gates. And some related, if we substitute the best known upper bounds on the stabilizer rank, here is the actual numerical scaling of these algorithms. All of these quantities, the best known upper bounds, are exponential in the number of T gates, as you would expect. In fact, for example, if the exact stabilizer rank were polynomial in the number of T gates, that would imply that you could count the number of solutions to a three-sat formula in polynomial time. So we certainly expect that these quantities scale exponentially with t. This gives the best known upper bounds, but we can't prove lower bounds on these quantities. Or I should say useful lower bounds. We certainly don't have any exponential lower bounds on stabilizer rank or approximate stabilizer rank.
If you did, would that imply something?
If you could, no, that's the thing. So you could really hope to prove lower bounds on stabilizer rank, because it doesn't imply like a complexity theoretic separation, yeah, as far as we know. So there's related work by Pashayan, Wallman, and Bartlett, where they consider a sort of more general framework of quasi-probability simulators, and they, I believe, do some numerics for QDIT stabilizer formalism. A paper by Mark Howard and Earl Campbell considers qubit simulators, but their algorithm applies to mixed states. If you apply it to pure states, then the scaling of that algorithm is worse than ours. But it has this feature that it can be applied to mixed state simulation. Okay. Oh yeah, and so you know we perform simulation of a very simple quantum algorithm with 40 qubits and up to 48 T gates. And you know, in this plot, there is the output of the algorithm in the ideal case is this bit string. And you can sort of see that when it's a zero, this bar is very small. And when it's a one, the bar is very big. And the bar is supposed to represent the probability of getting that output. So you can see that these agree with what they should be. And if we increase the sort of parameters in our simulation in a certain direction, then it would converge to the ideal answer.
Sorry, how do these plots show that they agree?
Yeah, so this represents the probability of getting zero.
Right.
So, you know, this shows that it's close to zero. So it's not supposed to be exact because there's like a parameter in the algorithm that, you know, you choose, and that's related to the precision of the simulation.
This is a weak simulation?
Yes, this is a weak simulation.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. The point is it's small when it's zero and it's large when it's one.
That's right. Okay, so now I want to tell you just one more thing about this, the way this, about our results from 2016, and then we'll move on to the new stuff. So I want to just tell you about how this upper bound works on the approximate stabilizer rank of the magic states. So first of all, I mean, we were talking about this A magic state, but actually it's going to be slightly more convenient to talk about this H magic state, which is the following single qubit state, and it's Clifford equivalent to the A magic state. So for all of purposes that we care about, we can just consider H. And I've written it here in the 0-1 basis, and then on the second line, I wrote it in the 0-plus basis. And if we just take that formula in the 0-plus basis and write it out t times, then we get a decomposition of H tensor t. And so I've written that here on the second line. And so here I've used the notation 0 hat is the 0 state and 1 hat is the plus state. So this sum is a sum over basis vectors in the 0 plus basis. And then there's this coefficient out front. And so how do we obtain, remember our goal is to obtain an approximation of this state that has few stabilizer states. And the way that we do that in our paper is we choose a subset of the bit strings. In fact, in our case, we choose that subset to be a linear subspace. And we choose a state that's proportional to the uniform superposition of these non-orthogonal basis vectors corresponding to bit strings in that linear subspace. And when you choose, so then you can sort of ask, you know, if you choose a random linear subspace of dimension 2 to the k, how well does it approximate this state? And that's a problem, you know, you can sort of see how well it does on in expectation. And what you find is that if the linear subspace has a dimension that scales like 1.17 to the t divided by delta squared, then you approximate the magic state to within delta in the 2 norm. So that's where this 1.17 to the t comes from. It's actually equal, 1.17 to the t is an approximation to 1 over cosine pi over 8 to the 2t, which is the exact answer that our algorithm achieves. So the rest, okay, so here are some like observations. So what we show in the paper, the point of telling you that is that we show that this approximate stabilizer rank for the t-fold tensor product of magic state scales as 1 over cosine pi over 8 to the 2t. And you might ask, like, where does that number come from? It's sort of a nice expression. And so one place it could come from is if you evaluate the maximum inner product between this magic state and a stabilizer state, then it's equal to that, cosine pi over 8 to the 2t. So that's one place, maybe, that this sort of comes from. A second place that you might think that it comes from is if you look at this stabilizer decomposition that we were talking about, this should be a T. So this is the stabilizer decomposition that's exact, where we just expand over a superposition of all of these non-orthogonal basis vectors. If you take the one norm of the coefficients that appear in front of the stabilizer states in this decomposition, so that calculation is done over here. You just sum up 1 to the t times and multiply by this overall coefficient. Then that's cosine pi over 8 to the minus t. So there's a couple of things that seem to be related to the approximate stabilizer rank, one of which is the fidelity with the stabilizer state, and the other one is the one norm of this stabilizer decomposition. So I would like to now explore in more generality how these three quantities are related.
Excuse me, so what if I have, instead of t, if I have square root
of t? Yeah, we'll get to that, actually. We'll talk later about general product states. Okay, so I want to talk about some measures of non-Cliffordness, or measures that measure how far outside the set of stabilizer states you are. So the first one we already talked about is the approximate stabilizer rank. We already defined that, so you approximate the state by a superposition of few stabilizer states. The second measure, I'm going to call it the stabilizer one norm, but it's actually the one norm squared, just so that the formulas simplify. So I'm going to look at, I take a stabilizer, a decomposition of psi into stabilizer states, and then I take the one norm of the coefficients, and then I square it. And the stabilizer one norm, the C star, is the minimum one norm over all stabilizer decompositions. Okay? So this is another measure of sort of how non-Clifford the state is. The minimum one norm squared of the coefficients in a stabilizer decomposition. And finally, I'm going to consider the stabilizer fidelity, which is the maximum squared overlap with the stabilizer state. Okay? So, and now I'm going to just tell you about some general relationships between these quantities. And actually, all of the relationships I'll talk about in the first part would hold if I wasn't talking about stabilizer states, but if I was also just talking about some other family of states. And then later, we'll talk about results which rely on the structure of stabilizer states. So the first thing is that the approximate stabilizer rank is upper bounded by the stabilizer one norm. So in particular, you have this delta parameter, but I would ask you to sort of ignore the delta parameter because it doesn't affect the exponential scaling, which is the thing that we care about. So here, the lemma says that the approximate stabilizer rank is upper bounded by 1 over delta squared times the stabilizer 1 norm. And how do you prove that? The proof is very simple, and again involves random sampling. So we have our state psi that we care about, and we approximate it by a superposition of stabilizer states. We have some coefficient C sub j, which we can take to be positive without loss of generality by just pushing the phase into the definition of phi sub j. And now we can define a probability distribution which is proportional to these coefficients C sub j, and we have to normalize it by their sum. And then we can consider a random state where it's, we choose L random stabilizer states, where each random stabilizer state is one of the terms in this superposition independently with probability P sub j proportional to its coefficient. And so then we can consider like a state chosen like this, a uniform superposition of these random states. And what you can show, it's a simple calculation to show that the expected distance squared between psi and this superposition is equal to the one norm squared divided by L, the number of terms. So what this says is that we can choose L, which is now, this is going to be our approximate stabilizer decomposition. We can choose L to be proportional to the stabilizer one norm. And so this proof is very simple and obviously doesn't use any structure of the stabilizer state. Are there any questions about that? Okay. So what it says is that if you have an exact stabilizer decomposition, that's this, where the one norm is small, you can convert it into an approximate stabilizer decomposition with few terms. Okay, so then you can ask, you know, is this actually a tight bound? Like, is the approximate stabilizer rank just, you know, is this equal to the stabilizer one norm? And the answer to that question we're going to see later is no. And then you can ask, like, well, is this one norm that appears on the right-hand side easier to compute than the approximate stabilizer rank? And the answer to that turns out to be yes in some cases that we're interested in. Okay, so now we've related the approximate stabilizer rank to the stabilizer one norm, but it's also true that this stabilizer fidelity plays, you know, is related to these quantities through the following formula. The stabilizer one norm is convex minimization. It's minimization of this one norm quantity. And using a dual program, one can express it as a maximization of the following quantity. So here we have, you can choose any witness W and evaluate the inner product squared with psi, and then divide by the stabilizer fidelity of W, and that gives you a lower bound on stabilizer one norm. And not only that, but there is some optimal witness that achieves equality. So C star is equal to the maximum. Okay, so this is a figure that Earl Campbell made that illustrates different kinds of witnesses, maybe I'll skip that. So one choice you could make is just to choose the witness to be equal to the state that you care about, psi, and then that would tell you that the stabilizer one norm is at least one over the stabilizer fidelity. Now, okay, actually this formula on the right-hand side can be proved sort of trivially in one line. I mean, you don't really need this to prove it. But I did want to point it out because, so I was at QIP a few weeks ago and I heard this interesting talk by Michael Walter where they prove what's called a robust Hudson theorem for Q-dit stabilizer formalism. And what that theorem says is that the stabilizer fidelity for Q-dits, the maximum fidelity with the stabilizer state, is lower bounded by 1 over the sum negativity. The sum negativity is like the one norm of the Wigner function. And so I would view this as some kind of qubit analog of that. I mean, you move the fidelity on the other side. So it's the fidelity is lower bounded by 1 over the C star quantity, the one norm, the minimum one norm of a stabilizer decomposition. I don't know if there's any, you know, value in making this analog, but I thought I would mention because I thought it potentially could be interesting. Okay. Okay, so we just talked about some sort of generalities about the relationship between the approximate stabilizer rank, the stabilizer one norm, and the stabilizer fidelity, the maximum inner product with the stabilizer state squared. And now I want to, from now on, sort of start using properties of stabilizer states and the structure of stabilizer states. And in particular, I want to consider the behavior of these quantities under tensor product. I mean, if we could answer that, that would really help a lot, right? Because we care about the approximate stabilized rank of T-fold tensor product of magic states. And so if we could, you know, suppose that quantity was multiplicative, then we'd be in good shape if it was multiplicative under tensor product. But, okay, so these are the three quantities, and maybe we care about multiplicativity under tensor product. Actually, for approximate stabilizer rank, we will basically get no answers to this question. But for the other two quantities, we can get, so for C star, we get a partial answer. And for the stabilizer fidelity, we can sort of completely solve this problem. So that's what I want to tell you about next. So here I'm going to just talk about the multiplicativity or non-multiplicativity of this stabilizer fidelity, the maximum inner product squared with the stabilizer state. And so it's obvious that the following inequality holds, because if I consider psi tensor phi, I can always choose a product stabilizer state for which, you know, the maximum inner product squared is at least is equal to f of psi f of phi. So I always have this inequality. But the question I want to consider is, like, are they actually equal? You know, is the stabilizer fidelity multiplicative? And if you think about this for not very long, you can easily show that they're not multiplicative in the general case. So in particular, if you take a Haar random state and you take psi tensor psi star,
then one can see that the state order fidelity is strictly greater than the product of f psi and f psi star. And the way you can show this is very simple. First, one shows that you can show that, you know, the inner product between a random state psi and any fixed state is with high probability 1 over 2 being. And the probability is so high that you can take a union bound over all stabilizer states and show that the maximum unit product of the stabilizer state is at most polynomial union divided by 2. And so then, now you can consider psi tensor psi star, and you can, the maximum inner product with a stabilizer state is at least the inner product squared with a maximally entangled state. But that inner product squared is just 1 over 2 to the n, which is anomalously large, because this is a 2n qubit state. So this is anomalously big, and, you know, is in particular bigger than the product of these two things, which is roughly 1 over 2 to the 2n. Okay, so that's like kind of a disappointing fact that this stabilizer fidelity is not always multiplicative. But now you can ask, let's say I want to find the largest set of states S, such that for any two elements of the set, the stabilizer fidelity is multiplicative. So then we can completely characterize this state, this set S, and it has some interesting features that I'll talk about in a moment. Okay. So I want to define a set of states that I will call stabilizer aligned. And I'm going to start by defining the set P sub K of stabilizer projectors of rank 2 to the k. So these are projectors onto stabilizer cones of dimension 2 to the k. So if k is 0, this is just a rank 1 projector onto the stabilizer state set of such rank 1 projector. And now I define a state psi as stabilizer aligned following the equality hold. So on the right-hand side, I have the maximum inner product squared with the stabilizer state. And on the left-hand side, I have sort of the maximum fidelity with the stabilizer subspace of dimension 2 to the k, but I have this funny divided by square root 2 to the k. Now, just to, you know, help parse this formula, if I take k equals 0 on the left-hand side, I just get f of psi. So like for k equals 0, this is just an equality. For higher k, if I were to replace this square root 2 to the k with just 1 over 2 to the k, then this would trivially be true, because on the left-hand side, I would have like a projector onto, you know, a rank 2 to the k projector divided by 2 to the k. The projector, you know, it has a basis of stabilizer states, and so each one of those inner products is at most fidelity. But now I'm taking this funny square root, and that's kind of what makes this non-trivial definition. Okay, so now let me tell you the theorem that we proved. So first of all, if you take two states that are stabilizer aligned, then the fidelity of psi tensor phi is f psi f psi f phi. Second of all, if a state is not stabilizer aligned, then you can do sort of exactly the same thing that I talked about for hard random states. So you can take psi tensor psi star and show that that produces a violation of multiplicative. And finally, and this is maybe the most interesting feature of this set of states, which is that it's closed under tensor product. So if you take psi tensor phi, then that's stabilizer aligned whenever psi and phi are both stabilizer aligned. Let me just, I'm only going to say one thing about the proof. So actually, the proof of number 2 is sort of a long, you know, it's not hard. It's of a similar difficulty as the proof of hard random state. But 1 and 3, to prove that, we use this result from 2006 of Ravi, Fatal, and Gossman, which characterizes entanglement in tripartite stabilizer states, which gives you a characterization of entanglement in bipartite stabilizer projector. And to prove 1 and 3, they both follow from the following inequality, which on the left-hand side, we have psi tensor phi, and we have this normalization over stabilizer and on the right hand side we have f of psi f flash. And so if you want to see why 1 and 3 follow from it, so first of all for 1, if you take k equals 0 on the left hand side, then what this becomes is the stabilizer fidelity of psi tensor phi. And so now this is the hard correction of proving that statement number 1. If you take higher k, if you take higher k, remember there was this condition of being stabilizer aligned, which said that you have to prove this quantity is at most the stabilizer fidelity of this state. But you know this thing is certainly upper bounded by the stabilizer fidelity of psi tensor phi. Okay, so how, you know, I mentioned we use the structure of entangling diffractive stabilizer projectors. What do? So we take this stabilizer projector, and we use this structure theorem, which says you can map it by local Clifford's to a certain canonical form where the only part that acts between these subsystems has like Bell pairs, and it has some parts which are like projectors on the 1 plus ZZ over 2. So there's a certain type of entanglement that persists after acting with local Clifford's, and it's a simple type of entanglement. And so once you act with local Clifford's, you can simplify the formula so the entanglement has a simple form, and then you have to somehow use the stabilizer alignedness of these states along with that simple form of this, what's left of the stabilizer projector, and you know, to prove that is a public paper. Okay. But a useful corollary is that if you have a whole lot of stabilizer aligned states, then the fidelity just, you know, becomes multiplicative. It becomes completely multiplicative. And the reason is because now when I tensor all these guys together, you know, the set of stabilizer aligned states is closed under tensor product. So I can take, you know, 2 through m and that stabilizer aligned, and this is stabilizer aligned, and I can use number 1 recursively. Okay, so let me give you some examples of stabilizer aligned states. So all single qubit states are stabilizer aligned, which is easy to check, because in this case, this formula just says that the stabilizer fidelity is at least 1 over square root 2. So that can easily be seen to hold for all single qubit states. So you can verify the conditions of being stabilizer aligned for up to, say, 4, maybe you could do 5, I mean, certainly up to 4 qubits, sort of numerically, by exhaustively, you know, searching over stabilizer projectors. And so using that, you can check that a random 2 or 3 qubit state is stabilizer aligned. You can do many examples. I have never found an example of a 2 or 3 qubit state that is not stabilizer aligned. An interesting set of 3 qubit states that use.
But a Haar random.
Haar random for large enough n.
For large enough n.
Yeah, for large enough n. So that's kind of the question. It's like, what's the smallest n for which there exists a stabilizer, a state that's not stabilizer? Yeah, so for 3 qubit states, an interesting class of states is those which are sort of resource states for diagonal gates in the third level of the Clifford hierarchy. And we check all of those, and they're all stabilizer aligned. And so for example, this resource state of infinite control TK.com later. But yeah, as Daniel says, I mean, like, you know, this proof that a Haar random state is not stabilizer aligned holds for large n. And you can ask, you know, is it just true that, like, up to maybe 8 or 6 or up to some number, you know, it could be that all states are stabilizer aligned? I don't know what the number is. Maybe it's 1. You know that all single qubit states are stabilizer aligned. Okay. Okay, so now, like, I want to use some of these results about stabilizer fidelity to just compute this quantity of stabilizer one norm for some quantities, or for some states of interest. Okay, so just to remind you, I mean, really, we're interested in the approximate stabilizer range. but we related that to the stabilizer 1 norm and the stabilizer fidelity. And we could solve for when the stabilizer fidelity is multiplicative, and now we're going to use that to compute the 1 norm. And that 1 norm gives you an upper bound on the property of the stabilizer. Okay. So we're going to do this for two classes of states, quintilineal states and product states. So then you will get his answer about the square root of g. Okay, so what is a Clifford magic state? Psi is a Clifford magic state if the rank one projectron to psi can be written as the uniform sum over Clifford's, which come from some subgroup of the Clifford group. So for example, this H magic state is a uniform sum of identity H, and those two matrices form a subgroup of Clifford. Of course, if we take the n-fold tensor product, then it remains a Clifford magic state. Another example is this controlled-controlled Z resource state, so controlled-controlled Z acting on 3 plus state. And more generally, if we take any diagonal gate in the third level of the Clifford hierarchy and act with act on a bunch of pluses, then we get a Clifford magic state. Okay, so the whole story for simulation of Clifford plus T carries through for Clifford plus U circuits, where U is a gate from the third level, a diagonal gate from the third level of Clifford. So for example, you could consider Clifford plus control control T. So you can do, instead of a T gadget, you can do a U gadget. And the resource state now, instead of being the A magic state, is this magic state, which is the U acting on all pluses. And so when you gadgetize, you get an adaptive Clifford circuit where the input state is T4 into product of this U state, and you have a T, U in the circuit. And the weak simulation cost is again related to the approximate stabilized rank of that input state. Now, now remember that the approximate stabilizer rank is upper bounded by the stabilizer 1 norm, C star, and that's the thing that we can compute exactly in this case. So if psi is any Clifford magic state, it's not hard to show that this stabilizer 1 norm is exactly 1 over the stabilizer fidelity. So remember, we proved earlier that this was a lower bound using this mirror weightless. We used the general relationship between the stabilizer 1 norm and the stabilizer fidelity. But the claim is that it's also an upper bound. And so there. Okay, so the proof of this is fairly simple. We take a stabilizer state such that the fidelity is equal to the inner product squared with psi. And then, so psi is by assumption a Clifford magic state, which means we can write it as a uniform sum over group elements in the subgroup of the Clifford group. And so then we can act on phi with this projector and then divide by the inner product to get an alternative expression for psi. But now, now look at this expression. I mean, what we have here is a decomposition of psi in terms of stabilizer states. And we can take the 1 norm of that decomposition. And that gives us an upper bound on C star, since C star is a minimization. And so the 1 norm of this decomposition is exactly 1 over the fidelity. And so this matches the upper bound that we made earlier. So this we have not used yet, our results on multiplicativity. However, so then using the fact that, the general relationship between approximate stabilizer rank and stabilizer fidelity, we get the following upper bound in terms of the stabilizer fidelity, which is T-fold tensor product of magnitudes. But now, if we care about a specific example, let's say controlled-controlled Z, so we want to consider Clifford plus controlled-controlled Z gate, then this approximate stabilizer rank is upper bounded by this 1 over this fidelity, but now we know that that's, because this controlled-controlled Z state is stabilizer aligned, we get multiplicativity, and so we can just evaluate stabilizer 1 norm in this case. And actually, you can plug in a number, because for 3 qubits, you can just compute the stabilizer fidelity. So you get 1.78. Okay. So an open question is whether or not all different magic states are stabilized or aligned. Okay, so the last example is going to be product states. And so the claim is that for product states, actually this stabilizer one norm is multiplicative. And that follows from the multiplicativity of stabilizer fidelity along with the fact that all single qubit states are stabilizer aligned. And so the proof follows from those two things quite simply. So we know that for each, so here we have psi 1 through psi n, which are single qubit states. And each of, sorry, this should be psi I here. For each psi I, there's some optimal witness for which this equality holds. So there's some W I for which C star is equal to this product square divided by the stabilizer fidelity of W I. And now we can use the tensor product witness of the optimal witnesses in the lower bound for C star of this tensor product. And that's what we get. But now using the fact that all single qubit states, and in particular these witness states, are stabilizer aligned, we can replace this with the product of the fidelities. And this quantity here is the product of the C stars. So this says that C star of the tensor product is at least C star, the product of the C stars, and that matches the upper bound that's just trivially more, the C stars minimization. Okay, so then like now the whole problem, like let's say you care about the stabilizer one norm of a tensor product of single qubit states, then the problem just reduces to understanding the stabilizer one norm of single qubit states individually. And so you can plot, you know, what that C star quantity is on the box here. So this is a sort of uninformative plot, but one thing you might be interested in is the maximum value, which is given by around 1.27. And so for any single qubit state, we get an upper bound, or for any state psi vector n, we get an upper bound on the approximate stabilizer rank, which is, you know, you take the value on this plot and take it to the power of one. An interesting case is when you look at the sort of equator here, which corresponds to real single qubit states. So these are, you know, I'm going to write cosine theta is the state cosine theta over 2,0 plus sine theta over 2,1. So when theta is pi over 4, you get the H magic state we talked about earlier. On this plot, I'm showing two things. One is the C star as a function of theta. So at the very edge here, which is pi over 4, that's C star is equal to 1.17. Okay, that's the quantity that appeared in the original simulation algorithm. In the blue, you see C star corresponds to a decomposition in the 0 plus basis. That's the basis where we get the minimal 1 norm. If you consider a decomposition of like T copies of this theta state in the 0, 1 basis, and then truncate the smallest value, you just throw away the basis states that have very small coefficients. Then what you get is an approximate stabilizer decomposition whose cost is given by this blue curve. And so what this shows is that, you know, in this region here, a decomposition in the 0, 1 basis is better than the decomposition in the basis that's optimal with respect to the 1 norm. So this shows that there's an exponential gap between the approximate stabilizer range and the stabilizer 1 norm. And so, you know, the stabilizer 1 norm does not exactly characterize the approximate stabilizer. Okay, so then you can ask if this is relevant to simulation. So in the case of Clifford magic states, I told you that there was a simulation algorithm that has a runtime scaling with the approximate stabilizer ring. So here it's true that we get an upper bound on the approximate stabilizer ring for single qubit states. And you can ask if this relates to the weak simulation cost of circuits or a gate set, which is like Clifford plus a single qubit rotation. And actually, we don't know like a general relationship between these quantities, because there's no way of injecting them. I mean, there's not a you're not in the third level clear priority, and so we know that there's not a way to do the state injection with clicker correction. However, in this case, you can sort of just infer from the structure of the optimal one norm decomposition a weak simulator that has the same cost as you would have gotten if this relationship were true. And if you're interested in that, you know, come talk to me afterwards, I can tell you how it works. Okay, so that brings me to the end of what I wanted to say. And of course, there's many open questions, mostly related to whether or not we can extend these results to other gate sets. And, you know, can we compute lower bounds on these stabilizer quantities? So I'll end there and solve some questions.
So many years ago, Ben Reichardt found some like two or three qubit state that non-stabilizer state that had the property that if you made any measurement, you got a stabilizer state. Any if you marginalized to one qubit, if you with I think post selection, any stabilizer measurement, say, polymer. Seems like that might be a good state just to check if it's stabilizer
aligned. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, maybe I can get the reference from you.
Yeah, I mean, it's Ben Reichardt a long time ago. I'm sure we can find it. I'm sure we can find it.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah.
I'm still a little confused by your response to Professor Gottesman's earlier question. Why wouldn't the super polynomial lower bound on your weak parameter not imply P not equal to PP? Because we know.
Yeah, so the reason that it doesn't really have any implications that I know of in complexity theory if you can prove the lower bound is because, you know, so what you would like, I think what you would like to say is, you know, maybe what you're thinking is that. You know, a lower bound on stabilizer rank shows that you can't simulate quantum computing better than sort of whatever this lower bound tells you. But that doesn't follow from these results because what they tell you is that this approach using state injection, you know, this algorithm doesn't give you anything better. But there could be other classical simulation algorithms that, you know, have performance that scales with other parameters, and you know, so that's why. Stabilizer rank only would tell you about the performance of this algorithm and you know other things that might be connected to stabilizer rank, but not necessarily, but you know, it doesn't tell you that this is the best classical algorithm for simulating quantum
Thanks.